Hello and welcome to Meandering with Myrn, a potpourri of podcasts by me, veterinary ethologist Myrn Milani. Join me as I ponder any and all things animal and human, what we know and what we don't, where we've been, where we are, and where we're headed. On Columbus Day, my son Jeremy and his daughter Geneva came to visit, and I got a crash course in the dynamic nature of the human-canine bond. Geneva's about 3.5 years old, and one of the things that I've noticed about kids this age is that they get into the false fear stage. This is different than the fear stage that they have when they're really young. The false fear stage is that when you encounter anything new, you automatically go, ooh, 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 get away, ooh, ooh, ooh. Now, if you're familiar with dogs, you know that if there's one way to bring curious, happy dogs closer to you, it's to go, ooh, ooh, get away, get away. And they'll come running right over with their tails wagging and jump up on you. Particularly if your eyes are twinkling and there's a smile on your face and everything about your body language is saying, I'm not really scared, but I think that this is a really cool way to respond to things now. And that's exactly what happened. And of course, the more the dogs did that, the more Geneva did it. And we told her how to tell the dogs to get down, and she didn't do it. So we basically let it go. And as happens, when you ignore things like that, interest is lost and things change. This doesn't mean that the dogs weren't still very interested in Geneva. They were. But she decided it would be more fun to interact with the cat. The cat thought that this would be fun too, and he got on top of the ring where I store my firewood. And she started out petting him, but evidently the two of them got into some batting. And then she forgot that unlike her cat, Bam has claws, and he got her. And she came screaming to her dad and sobbed and sobbed and sobbed. Hurt not by the claws, neither one of us could see any evidence of a wound whatsoever, but deeply hurt that things didn't work out the way she thought they would. Now, while all this is going on, naturally, Bam really doesn't give a damn, but the dogs were very, very interested in this. While she's crying and her daddy's holding her, they're watching her. And there was this subtle transformation in Frick. Frick went from her dog mode, if you will, into her maternal mode. And it was almost like you could see her features soften. Ollie's a guy, and Ollie's Ollie, you know? And Ollie just seemed more determined than ever that this child was going to play with him. It took Geneva about 45 seconds to get over the devastation that the cat had brought into her life. And then her next plan was that she would sit on the couch, and I would sit next to her and hold the dogs. And then she would pet them. Meanwhile, Ollie had decided that there was nothing more irresistible than the sight of him, with his eyes bright and his tail wagging a mile a minute and his precious ball in his mouth. And so I held Ollie as best I could while he's doing this. Meanwhile, Frick, now in her maternal mode, flattened herself out, sort of like a frog, and her tail is wagging very slowly. And where Ollie is very, very bright-eyed and obviously intent, Frick is very calm and is giving Geneva more of these searching looks, like, what can I do to help you? This was a case where brawn overrode maternal instinct. Geneva looked at Ollie and looked at the ball, and then I took the ball from Ollie and threw it. Ollie immediately brought it back. Now, there is something so enchanting about a dog who brings a ball back that it takes a really frightened or disinterested person not to want to throw the ball again. But Ollie doesn't let go of the ball. And I should teach Ollie to let go of the ball, but to be honest, the ball's small, and I would rather have Ollie jump up into my lap and take it out of his mouth and have him drop it at my feet and have to bend over and maybe kick the ball under something. particularly as I get older and some days my knees aren't all that willing to cooperate. So I took the ball out of Ollie's mouth and I handed the ball to Geneva and she threw it again. We did this several times, and then pretty soon Frick decided, well, this is a pretty good game, and she found another ball, and then pretty soon there were two balls, and then it didn't take long for the dogs and Geneva to discover that I was a lot slower at this than they would be, and so Geneva started yanking the balls out of the dog's mouth herself and throwing them. And the dogs quickly realized that it would be a lot easier for them if they just dropped the ball at her feet, since she didn't have any trouble bending over to pick it up, than waiting for her to yank it out of their mouths. In no time, the game was up and running, and then that game segued into another game, and round they went through the house, totally amusing each other with much laughter and much panting and general good canine and human cheer. After Geneva and Jer had gone and I was sitting with the dogs, I got to thinking about this whole sequence and how they learned and taught each other so effortlessly. They knew what they wanted. They were purpose-oriented. And then they set out to accomplish that in the most energy-efficient way. I thought about what would have happened if I had decided I wanted to teach Geneva and the dogs to play ball. How would I have done that? I imagine I would have come up with what amounted to a lesson plan that would involve a specific sequence of training steps that my linear mind said would get me to that final goal. It would be a process. I would come up with a process. And at each step along the way, I would reward the dogs and I would reward Geneva for making the right response. And if I did this consistently and long enough, we would move closer to the time when dog and child could play the game together. And I would look at that in terms of what the canine teaching theory says about how long it takes a dog to internalize a new behavior, ditto for a child. And I would see this as a project, Graham's project, to teach the dogs in Geneva to play a fun game together. Man, I don't know about you, but it makes me tired just thinking about all that process. And yet, the dogs in Geneva, two dogs, two dumb animals, and a 3.5-year-old work this out. No rewards, no punishments, all by themselves, and in a matter of minutes. There are many references in multiple philosophies about the value of becoming childlike and seeing things as a child sees them. I think sometimes we get so lost in the mechanics of teaching the young that we forget that they come with a building capacity to learn and teach themselves. I know watching Geneva and the dogs and the cat, I saw something that I wish I could bottle. I wish I could make it into a spray or a plug-in diffuser and give to my clients and maybe give to all parents. Because it was so amazing to watch, so energy efficient, so natural, and above all, so incredibly effective.
You've been listening to a podcast by veterinary ethologist Myrna Milani. For more podcasts, commentaries and books about animal behavior and the human-animal bond, and links to behavior and bond sites, check out my website at www.mmilani.com. For more specific information, feel free to email me at mm@mmilani.com. All rights related to the content of these podcasts are retained by Myrna Milani. The background music, Molly on the Shore, by Percy Granger, is used with permission from Catova Arts, www.catova.com.